Tau Dvishtva Madhiram Tau Srimadantau Suratmajau Tayur Anugrahartaya Shapam Dasyam Idam Jagau Tau Dvishtva Madhiramat Tau Srimad Andhau Surat Majau Tayur Anugrahartaya Shapam Dasyam Idam Jagau
Tau
Dvishtva Madhiramatau
Srimadantau
Suratmajau Shapam Dasyam Idam Jagau
Tau
Drishtva Madhiramattau Srimadantau Suratmajau Tayor Anugrahartaya Sapam Dasyam Idam Jagau Tau Drishtva Madhiramattau Srimadantau Suratmajau Tayor Anugrahartaya Shapam Dasyam Idam Jagau Tau Drishtva Madhiramattau Srimadantau Suratmajau Tayor Anugrahartaya Shapam Dasyam Idam Jagau Tau The two boys of the demigods Drishtva, seeing, Madhiramattau, very intoxicated because of drinking liquor. Srimadantau, being blind with false prestige and opulence. Suratmajau, the two sons of the demigods. Tayo, unto them, Anugraha Arthaya, for the purpose of giving special mercy. Shapam, a curse. Dasyan,
desiring to offer them.
Idam, this. Jagao, uttered. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Seeing the two sons of the demigods naked and intoxicated by opulence and false prestige, Devarshi Narada, in order to show them special mercy, desired to give them a special curse. Thus he spoke as follows. Purport. Although in the beginning Narada Muni appeared very angry and cursed them, at the end the two demigods, Nalakuvara and Manigriva, were able to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna face to face. Thus the curse was ultimately auspicious and brilliant. One has to judge what kind of curse Narada placed upon them. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura gives herein a good example. When a father finds his child deeply asleep, but the child has to take some medicine to cure some disease, the father pinches the child so that the child will get up and take the medicine. In a similar way, Narada Muni cursed Nalakuvara and Monigriva in order to cure their disease of material blindness. Hare Krishna. There are two different things that are the causes of our suffering in this world. There are sins and there are aparads, and we should distinguish the different natures of the two. There are laws of nature. If you break those laws, if you violate the laws of nature by doing a forbidden activity, that is called sin. And the reaction is suffering. It's usually it's meted out in a mechanical way. There are laws of action and reaction, as there is in physical nature. As Isaac Newton formulated, for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. So it's measured according to the severity of what you do. You get an appropriate and qualitatively proportionate reaction of suffering or enjoyment for doing good things. That's punya and papa. It's actually a double dynamic of good and bad, not just bad. That's one level of material action and reaction. But then, see, that is governed by the avidya shakti of the Lord, the ignorance potency. This is the world of ignorance. But there's a second potency of the same maya, the vidya shakti, the enlightenment potency that raises us. It's our connection with the spiritual existence. By enlightenment, we recover gradually our connection with the Supreme. And we can regain entrance into the Supreme Realm. By the vidya shakti, other side of maya, the good side. That vidya shakti governs the dynamics of let's say sadhu sangha on one side, sadhu seva, and sadhu aparad. In connection with the material laws, you can either obey them or transgress them, and you get a good or bad reaction accordingly. Similarly, there's a dynamics of association with the potencies of the Supreme. Those potencies are personal, so we usually are dealing with devotees of the Lord, sadhus. We have sadhu sangha. In sadhu sangha, we can either serve them suitably to their pleasure, or we can do disservice to them. And just like you can obey or disobey the laws of material nature, you can please, when you associate with sadhus, you can please them or you can displease them. Service is called seva, and disservice is called aparada. Or to make a parallel, radhanam, aradhanam, and aparadhanam. So it's a different dynamic, it's on a different level. It's not just the material laws of nature, it's the spiritual laws of sadhu sangha. Sadhu sangha is coming from is a facility descending from the spiritual world. Ultimately, the sadhus, the highest sadhus, the original sadhus, are residents of the spiritual world. They are representatives of the spiritual realm and the spiritual potency. So it's a spiritual dynamic, although it's descending into the material world through the vidya shakti, the positive aspect of maya. So when an aparada is committed, it's something different than a regular sinful activity. It's a transgression against the spiritual laws. It's an act of displeasing the sadhus or the Supreme Lord directly. But the Bhagavata Seva Aparad is less serious than the Bhagavata Seva Aparad. Service against, aparad against the devotees of the Lord, the reaction is much more serious than direct offenses against the Lord himself. just as service to the sadhus is more potent. Madhbhaktya Abhyadika, I can't remember the whole phrase. How's it going? Madhbhakta Puja Abhyadika. This is, I think, said by Krishna to Uddhava, that especially potent in the realm of different kinds of service is even more than service to me or me in my Murti form, is service to the form of my devotee is most potent. And similarly, offense against the devotee, disservice against the devotee, is much more egregious than offense committed directly against Krishna or his deity form. So here, what these two boys have done is disservice to a great devotee. It's not just that they broke some law of nature by playing naked in the lake with the girls. Actually, on the heavenly planets, it's not such a great offense to be enjoying like that. The demigods have much more leeway to enjoy what we would consider illicit sex. Just like when Arjun was approached or encountered Urvashi when he visited the heavenly planets. You think heavenly planets are a nice place to visit, but there's danger there. The danger is these apsaras, one great danger of the heavenly planets. And Arjun was attracted, Urvashi. But he considered her his mother. Why was that? Some previous life?
No, because she's connected to Indra. Indra is his father.
Something else also. Beside that, it's something that happened in his previous life. But anyway, okay, she's a servant of his father, so he considers her on the level of a mother. She wanted to have sex with him. He refused because he considered her a mother. She got angry and cursed him. And she, first of all, argued with him that don't worry about the rules of what's illicit and what's illicit. Here in the heavenly planets, we don't have to follow those rules. We can enjoy the way we want. So similarly, Nalakuva and Manigriva weren't breaking the laws of nature by doing what they were doing in the lake, but they committed aparad against Narada when he came. If Narada hadn't shown up, there wouldn't have been any problem. But Narada, you can't, run around naked in front of a great sage. That's not nice. It's aparad. So therefore they are in trouble for the aparad, not for breaking any law of nature. But Narada is not becoming angry in the way we become angry. This is actually the answer to the question we were reading in verse 1. How is there the tamas, this apparently ignorant quality of anger manifesting in the great sage of the demigods? It's not regular anger. Because when we get angry, anger is a natural expression of desire to harm somebody. You know, the reaction in the body of anger is you get all fired up, you're ready to go into action and hurt somebody. That's how the body and the mind react in the mode of anger. You're ready to spring into action and do harm. But this, what Narada felt was impelled by the desire to do good. Anugrahartaya. He wanted to benefit these boys, not destroy them, pummel them, smash them, get rid of them. No. He didn't consider them enemies, and he wasn't intending to do any harm to them. So what you can call it anger because it looks like anger. He cursed them, and he spoke harsh words, and he showed some emotion. But the motivation was not ordinary anger. He wanted not to harm them, but to do them good. One has to, Prabhupada says very simply, one has to judge what kind of curse Narada placed on them. He didn't just tell them, you jerks, go to hell. he told them something very beneficial. His curse was for their benefit, to cure them of the evil mentality that made them do this aparata in the first place. Not just, here's reaction for your offense, you deserve it, but I'm going to help you so you never commit such an offense again. And you're going to become trees and sit there naked, stand there naked for a long time. And then after that, and then after Krishna comes and knocks you down, pulls out your roots, and you surrender to Krishna, then you will be cured of this contamination that made you do this in the first place. That's benefit. Can we trust that this is the dynamic of the association of great devotees? That even if we earn their curse, we're benefited. That we shouldn't be hesitant to associate with great devotees, even on the basis of being afraid of being cursed. Let us be cursed. It'll be the best thing for us. And if we avoid being cursed, then we'll be very well off. So by all means, let us associate with sadhus. That's a kind of logic, same pattern of logic that was expressed by Aristotle when he gave the opinion, by all means get married. He said, by all means get married. If you get a good wife, you're very fortunate. And if you get a bad wife, you can always study philosophy. same logic. That was the example of Socrates. His wife was a real shrew, but that encouraged him to just be absorbed in philosophy. So, by all means, we should associate with devotees. If we can please them, then we'll get their blessings. And if we displease them by our foolishness, we'll be cursed by them, and that will benefit us also. So, we don't have any excuse to avoid the association of devotees. We want to remain in material life, therefore we keep our association impure. We associate with lower people because we don't want to become higher. That's foolish. Therefore, Rupa Goswami recommends, what is it? Sadhu Sangha. Snigdehi and I'm sorry. I'm sorry. But how does it begin? Snigdehi. You should associate with Vaishnavas who are more. I remember what it means. You should associate with Vaishnavas who are more advanced than you, who are in a similar mood of devotional service. You're on the same wavelength. And who want to bother to give you some attention, that they feel sympathetic. Often a Vaishnava doesn't want to take disciples. Doesn't want people following them and worshipping them. He wants to be left alone to do his bhajan. Or he's afraid to take disciples. Or he doesn't feel qualified. He has other things to do than take care of disciples. So he has to be sympathetic. He has to be willing to let you, to give you his association. You know. But if those three qualifications are there, you should take advantage. That he is more advanced than you, three or four. More advanced, he's more advanced than you. He's in a similar mode of devotional service. Similar style of devotional service. If you want to learn a particular kind of devotional service, go to the particular kind of devotee who's practicing it. Third is that he's sympathetic, that he's interested in giving you his association. Then take it, pursue it, beg for it. Even if you end up offending him and get his curse. That's the best thing for you. That's the dynamics of spiritual association. It's always good for you. We have many examples of people who came into the association of devotees and behaved inimically toward the devotees and still became devotees themselves, because the association of sadhus is always beneficial. Eventually it leads to our perfection, even if it goes by the route of getting cursed and suffering. By all means, take the risk of engaging in devotional service and associating with Vaishnavas. The alternative is to remain forever in material ignorance. What is it? Vaishnava seva chadya nishtar paye keva. Did I get it right?
Yeah.
Very important statement. By Narottam Das Thakur?
Yeah.
Vaishnava seva?
Chadya
Vaishnava seva nishtar paye keva. Paye has some, some past tense in Bengali, Paye. Sarubhasha. Who's ever gotten deliverance having abandoned the service of the Vaishnavas? There's no hope of on any level deliverance. You may be concerned about deliverance from your debts, from your diseases, from your spouse, or from the cycle of material birth and death. You may have different concepts of what you need to be delivered to get from. When Bangladesh Desh was splitting away from Pakistan, the East, didn't want to be East Pakistan anymore, and they had a revolution, mainly because the Pakistani government decided to kill all the Bengalis, which is not a very welcome policy. So the Bengalis revolted with the help of the Indian government. And their revolution was called the Mukti Bahini, the liberation movement. Yeah. But it translates into Bengali, Mukti Bahini. That liberation is called Mukti, Nistar. That's political liberation. Or feminist liberation. Different concepts of what the Nistara is. But you're not going to get any kind of Nistara if you abandon the service of the Vaishnavas. On any level, you won't be saved. What to speak of actual liberation, or the ultimate liberation of attaining love of Krishna? No question. If you avoid or reject the service and the association of Vaishnavas, that we have to hold on to. Even if everything else slips out of our hands, that we have to hold on to. Hare Krishna. So any questions or comments? Yes,
sir. So Shrimad Thakura, he's making analysis of all aparatas, and he's saying that the traces of Vaishnava aparatas are still there due to Bhava Deva and Evan. So it seems to be a contradiction. Very beneficial to this Vaishnava, but at the same time, we can commit so many paradoxes and destroy our spiritual.
Yes, well, what can you do? We need this association of Vaishnava, even though there's danger in it.
Mm.
The reactions are severe. Aparads give severe against Vaishnavas, can set you back a whole lifetime or more than one lifetime. What am I doing? Looking at myself, what am I doing in this lecha body full of lusty desires? Because I committed aparad against my guru in my last life, obviously. Therefore, I'm in this condition. I'm paying for it, but the risk has to be taken. Just like you want to build a tunnel, you're going to have to use dynamite. Even though that dynamite, you're going to have to use dynamite to blow your way through the, through the rocks of the mountain to build a tunnel. That dynamite can blow your head off, but you have to take the risk of using it. So we have to use the spiritual dynamite of associating with pure devotees. It's dangerous stuff, but we have to use it. It's a tool of the trade. Okay.
So they do use dynamite, but they do have to associate with.
Yeah, we can do safer things, but they won't save us. We can do very safe things that are harmless, but they're also not beneficial. Yes.
So maybe it's very important to, from the very beginning, to know how to say properly certain
thoughts. How to associate? Yes. In the very beginning, why not find out how to properly associate with Vaishnavas, how to avoid those serious offenses? What are they? Know what they are. Watch out for them. And learn how not to do them. And how to get the best benefit, too. There's a positive side. What can you do to a Vaishnava? Even if, okay, now I know how to avoid the aparadhas. Now, what can I do to get the most benefit? What will please the Vaishnavas the most? That we have to investigate. And why not do that in the very beginning? Why wait 30 years, fool around for 30 years, make gross mistakes, suffer, maybe fall down, have a major fall down? Why waste decades? Why not find out in the very beginning the right thing to do and the things to avoid? Proper training in the beginning, would be very, very beneficial. It would help a lot.
Yes. Speaking of punya and papa, you mentioned that papa involves infraction on the laws of nature, and there's a particular reaction for that.
Yes.
Sometimes we speak of sins, two kinds of sins. We speak of sins of omission and sins of commission.
Yes.
So, is that a valid concept? For example, if someone fails to do his punya, is that in itself a papa, or is that... It seems as if it cannot be neutral because there are reactions.
That's in the karma kanda path. In the path of karma, it is a dosha not to do what's prescribed. Hmm. There's sin accrued just by not doing your duty on the karma kanda path.
Yeah.
So yes, sin of omission gets a positive effect, positive sinful reaction. And also, it's just actually sometimes just semantic. What's the difference between positive and negative? Not letting your foot off the accelerator pedal is the same thing as keeping it down, holding it down.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a matter of semantics, whether you express it positively or negatively. Mm-hmm. What's not doing one thing is doing another thing at the same time.
For example, the devotees were discussing with Srila Prabhupada at one time this Ramakrishna mission, how it's so popular in Bengal.
Yes.
And Prabhupada said, I blame my god brothers for this. Because at the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati,
it was kept down.
It was kept down by the aggressive preaching of the Gaudiya monk. But after his departure, they all started fighting and stopped the preaching, and Ramakrishna mission flourished.
Mm. Yes. That's his... Operad by omission. Yeah. But you can understand it as they're not preaching. You can also reinterpret it as they're doing something else, like quarreling with one another, or getting involved in other activities. So the same thing can be understood positively or negatively. Yes.
When you see that someone is acting inimically toward us, so he's committing some practice,
yes.
What should we do in this situation? Shall we avoid him, like upeksha, or shall we try to somehow persuade him?
The normal procedure for a Majjhima Bhakta should be to avoid. But if you feel empowered, you can try to save him. How? You can try to change, if you can make an attempt to change that inimical feeling into a positive feeling, because it means some attraction. If he's getting angry at you, it means he's interested in you. So you can turn that interest in a positive direction, if you're empowered. If you're especially empowered, you can try cursing, but I don't think any of us should try that. Just like we shouldn't get into any fights, because it'll get into the newspapers, and it'll be bad publicity. ISKCON devotees, fighting and killing demons. Nah, it won't look good in the papers. Yeah, neither will casting curses right and left. I don't think that will be good publicity. So better we refrain, because we're representing a public institution, and we may besmirch the reputation of the institution by doing something that's just too radical, too spectacular, like cursing someone or doing violence to them. That we should avoid.
Yes. So that in that light, sometimes we see that a person, because of in the interest of institutional solidarity,
yes.
You can say loka sangraha for that.
Yes, yes.
He will place aside his personal faith on an issue,
yes.
And do what is quote-unquote objectively best for the institution, even though he doesn't believe in it, or doesn't believe in it 100%. So what kind of reaction occurs in that circumstance?
If it's really for the benefit of the institution, for the spiritual benefit, because if we're talking about spiritual institution, then it's really for the spirit, if it really is what the guru wants, then okay. Or the activity of a disciple in this, in this line is all judged on the ultimate criterion: is it what the guru, what Prabhupada wants or not. Mm. So if it serves Prabhupada's purposes and pleases him, then even something political might be appropriate. Look at the example though of how the advisors of the Kuru dynasty behaved. You know, in response to Duryodhana's depravity, they didn't stop him, mm-hmm. And that was a great fault. That was the cause of the dynasty's destruction. They thought they were serving the state, doing their duty to obey the king, but actually they destroyed the kingdom by it. So it was wrong. It didn't serve the purpose of the institution. It destroyed the institution. So you have to look at, you know, that's a case of what not, how not to behave. Like Kripacharya and even Bhishma in the Kuru dynasty.
It's very difficult because someone may believe that, you know, X is in the best interest of the institution,
yeah.
But because of political pressure or in the interest of so-called objectivity, he may be obliged to make some compromise and do Y instead.
Yeah.
So it's arguable as to whether it's in the best interest. That's the crux.
Right, it's really tricky. Get involved in politics, life becomes very complicated. Sometimes we have to do it. If we can, on the excuse of being Brahmins, avoid politics, it may be better. Somebody should do it. Some Brahmins have to become advisors to the government. Others avoid it. You need both kinds. But the ones who get involved also very often get in trouble.
Like
that's just the risk they take.
It's like many Brahmins don't want to become, they don't want to do marriages and things like
don't
that.
Don't even become priests, what to speak of advisors to the government.
Because you get the reactions from the people that you're representing, on the yajamanas, you get their...
Yeah, so you're doing it for money. Mm-hmm. But even if you serve the government, not for money, you don't take money, you just give it freely out of interest, you know, pro bono publica. Mm-hmm. Still, you can get into trouble by doing the wrong thing.
If you take the position of an authority.
Yeah, yes. And it is, politics is messy. Mm. You know, people get hurt, and you may be to blame for hurting somebody. Mm. Committing an offense, maybe. Somebody has to do it. If you can avoid doing it, you're lucky. If you can avoid being involved in the administration, you're lucky. We need some Brahmins who are just Brahmins that don't get involved in administration. That's also needed. Yes? Bhagavad?
I have a question. You mentioned before that association with pure devotees, is in any cases, we will always get benefit. But if we bring so many offense or apparat to the devotee,
yes.
It's... How can it will get benefit? It will always bring apparat. It will bring us, go, will take us away from this.
No, but the curse of someone else or of Krishna himself will benefit us. will suffer, but will benefit by that suffering. What's the alternative? To go away from the association or never have had that association? That means to be cursed to ignorance. Better to suffer at the reaction of aparad than to just be in ignorance. It's better, even to do all the wrong things, commit all the aparads and get all the reactions. Am I wrong? Do you think that we should avoid the association of Vaishnavas so not to commit aparads?
No,
I mean, we can't assume. How can you assume I'm going to commit offenses, therefore I should never associate with Vaishnavas, because I know I'm going to commit offenses. How can you assume that?
No, nothing venture, nothing gain.
Yeah. That's cowardice. I know I'm going to be offensive, therefore I won't go near the Vaishnavas. That's just cowardice. How do you know? You're so bad. How do you know you're so bad? Yes, sir.
I'm asking this question because this is a story I recently heard of a devotee that I know in Vancouver. This devotee, he was born in the movement. His parents were devotees. Something like 9 years ago or 10 years ago, his mother disappeared. Or we didn't hear anything about his mother.
Yes. How old was he?
I was 18.
Okay.
19. 10 years ago. Well, he's about my age now, 25. About my age, so he was still. 6 years ago, maybe 98. Anyways, 6 years. And then he was going on his emotional suicide. I met him like in 2000, and he was very enthusiastic. It seems he was very enthusiastic. But he was hanging out with another group. But he seems very enthusiastic to do kirtan and to do devotional practices. And then we just recently heard one day at the Sunday feast. It was heard that the person that the mother was missing because he killed her.
Wow.
Hare Krishna.
So I'm wondering, how can such a person
continue?
What's his destination? How can such a person continue in devotional service with such a heavy reaction behind
him? Well, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that one.
I mean, this was really heavy when I heard this.
Yes.
What happened since? And then what am I to think of him? Like,
well, what's his condition? Where is he at now?
He's in prison now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so.
Is there any reason why he killed his mother?
I don't know. We don't know the reason. I haven't mentioned that yet.
Maybe it was justified.
I think his father is a bit of a heavy person, so I don't know if it's anything in relation with his father's, and that he's thinking, Mom, you're committing Vaishnava Parad. I better
kill
him. His father just like Parashuram told him to.
I know, but the person, like, I could never know. I could never know from that person.
Yes.
Like, he seemed he was enthusiastic in devotional service.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he was on his way out. You know, that he so displeased Krishna by doing that, you know, his spiritual life was finished, but Krishna let him get a few last licks in just to get, you know, to earn a few credits before his getting kicked out. Might be that. And Krishna, out of his kindness, let him do a little more devotional service. I'm just guessing. I don't understand. I don't know this situation. This is a, you know, unusual situation. I can't say. But sometimes Krishna lets us do a little more service, even when we by all rights should be kicked out immediately. But Krishna lets us get a little more credit. He lets people continue to engage in service we shouldn't be allowed to. Sometimes, just for their benefit. Temporarily, lets them continue some, you know, lets them go on with devotional service longer than he should be allowed to.
But it's like
sometimes.
It seems that he's continuing devotional service, he's like chanting Krishna's name, so he's getting free from some sinful reaction of
Well, that's Krishna's kindness then. Do you think that he should?
Yeah.
Do you think Krishna should deal with him worse?
No. It's just
you think Krishna shouldn't be like that? Krishna is very kind. Even the criminals and the apparatis, he gives them a chance. Yes, sir.
I was also thinking about the statement of the neck of devotion as Prabhupada says, when there's a taste in the beginning, which is like a shadow taste.
Yes.
It's not real, the real taste. But this diminishes just like the waxing moon when one commits.
When we commit apparatis, yeah.
Yeah. So it's not just like that. It's gradually, it goes.
Or we may have some real taste. That real taste will turn into a shadow.
Yeah.
And if we have only a shadow, it will disappear.
Mm.
And that's what's said. Even if we have real taste, it will become less, and it can turn into just a shadow. And if we have just a shadow, we'll end up with nothing as a reaction of offenses.
Hmm.
So better to get some real taste. Then even if we commit offenses, the reaction won't be as bad. The more credit we get, the less we'll suffer from demerits. Okay. Adhyodana Prabhu.
Is there any evidence in scripture the Supreme Lord got angry with someone, of course?
It's said sometimes that Krishna is angry. When Arjuna arrested Ashwatthama, Amarshito, he was angry.
Hmm.
What is it? He was very angry. He says he was angry, but it describes him as Kamala Lochana, the lotus-eyed one. And then when Arjuna arrested him just before that, it says Amarsha Tamraksha.
Hmm.
That his eyes were bright red out of anger. So the difference was Krishna was angry, but his eyes still looked like lotuses. But Arjuna's eyes, when he got angry at the same person for the same reason, his eyes looked like hot red copper coins, like red hot copper. So there's a difference. Krishna gets angry, but his anger is different. His eyes still look like lotuses. But when the devotee gets angry, his eyes look like bright copper coins.
What kind of anger Narada Muni was?
I don't know. It doesn't describe what his eyes looked like. But but it does describe. This verse says, that today's verse says, that he was thinking first about helping them. He wasn't, because regular anger means you want to hurt somebody. But he was thinking, how can I help them? So it's not, he wasn't experiencing material anger. It was special anger. Okay. Anugrahartaya. Yes?
I remember in the second temple there is an instance about Lord Ramachandra who was entering the ocean. His eyes were
Sushonita. Dure Suvid. Sushonita, I'm sorry, anyway, Sushonita, very bright red.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Is it also some special
thing? No, that's spiritual, that's an anubhava, that's a bodily symptom of ecstasy. That's not material anger, that wasn't material anger. In devotional ecstasies, sometimes anger shows with bright redness of the eyes, but that's transcendental, that's different. That's anubhava. I thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.